Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to The Tonight Show. More questions for RTE as a new report finds that an exit package for a senior executive was not agreed by the executive board. There's also heated exchanges in the Dáil as Sinn Féin calls for the TV licence to be scrapped and replaced by direct exchequer funding.
Your government should not chase thousands of people through the courts for non-payment of the licence. Will you abolish the TV licence, yes or no?
Are you suggesting people not pay the TV licence in that interim period?
Also on the programme, CEOs of the biggest tech firms face a US Senate grilling over harms their products are causing young people.
I know you don't mean it to be so, but you have blood on your hands. You have a product. You have a product that's killing people.
And we've the latest from Brussels on the deal reached to restore power sharing in the north. Media Minister Catherine Martin has said a report into RTE's voluntary exit programmes demonstrates what she describes as an appalling disregard for the principles of equity, fairness and transparency. The broadcaster is back at the centre of controversy again today over the exit package of its former chief financial officer, Breda O'Keefe. Staff were told today that this wasn't cleared by RTE's executive board, but was agreed by the former Director General, Dee Forbes. Well, joining me to discuss this are Fianna Fáil Senator and member of the Oireachtas Media Committee, Shane Castles, Sinn Féin TD and member of the Public Accounts Committee, Rose Conway Walsh, Elaine Burke, tech journalist and broadcaster, and by Larry Bass, CEO of Shinawil. You're all very welcome along to the programme tonight. We heard what the media minister had to say, an appalling disregard for the principles of equity, fairness and transparency in the treatment of staff. And this goes to the heart, I suppose, of the governance issues at RTE. Shane, what's your response to it?
Absolutely. I mean, we were meeting today as a media commission. You're thinking to yourself, how many more things can go wrong with RTE in this long-running saga? It's an awful pity that Taisho the Musical got made, because we could have done RTE the Musical at this stage. We could have brought Tubbs home. We could have appeared on guest appearances. In all seriousness, it goes to show again how, you know, another institution in this country was ruled with an iron fist by one person. We've seen it previously at our own committee where, you know, John Delaney had total disregard for the board when he was running the FAI and the mess they were in and the subsequent bailout of their predicament. And here again, we have the same thing with RTE and the manner it was run and the disregard, not just for the board, but indeed the executive board in this case also. And that is the most disconcerting thing in the terms of this severance package that wasn't then agreed by the executive board. And I mean, I've heard this evening as well, obviously Dee Forbes hasn't made a comment due to her ongoing illness. I think I've heard on the news this evening from the camp from Miss O'Keefe or whatever that it was an RTE issue. But at the same time, she was the chief financial officer. Mm. She was on the executive board. Yeah. Surely she should have known as well that these things were not being done in the right and proper manner.
What we heard from Kevin Backhurst was that the report accepted that the failure of this exit package to go before a board was a mistake by RTE, not by Breda O'Keefe in this regard. Mm. We also heard a spokesperson for Dee Forbes saying that she was not in a position to comment at this point. But in this regard, I suppose we have not got any comment or point of view on any of this from Dee Forbes. How soon are you expecting clarity on how this happened? Because we have the report saying it happened, but how it happened and why it happened?
Absolutely. And I suppose that today at the media committee, we have agreed to bring RTE back in again. They're coming in on Valentine's Day. And in that respect, the agenda is obviously going to do...
What does that say I mean, you're saying February 14th. There's nothing in that, is there, Shane?
I show a lot of love to all of the witnesses that come before me, right, and I'm sure all the other members will as well. When you think about the items on the agenda for that day, it is packed to the gills yet again. We thought we were going to move to draw a line under this before Christmas. Kevin Backhurst was announcing the restructuring plan, and we thought we were giving RT the space to move ahead with it. Instead, we've now got an agenda that's dealing with the Grant Thornton report in terms of Tycho the musical. We've got the issues pertaining to the severance packages. We're also awaiting two more governance reports from the minister herself.
We were expecting these reports, and we were expecting this report that RT, it's an RT report commissioned by RT and carried out by McCann Fitzgerald.
Absolutely.
We were expecting this.
Absolutely. But I suppose, again, when you hear it and when you hear the level of breach of trust that existed, it just takes you back once again. And it takes you back to the broader discourse then about RTE's place and its trust within society. And I would give Kevin Backhurst great credit for the job that he's trying to do in re-establishing that trust with the public. He has been a very genuine player in that respect over the last 8-9 months that he's been dealing with us. But the task is mammoth in front of him and indeed the organisation itself.
And Kevin Backhurst was at pains to say, you know, this won't happen again. But nonetheless, he had to stand in front of staff today and explain that it did happen. And for the public to see this report in an exit package that's claimed to be in the region of around €400,000, Rose.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's like peeling an onion. And every layer you go through, we're 7 months later now since this started with RTE. And more and more, just when you think nothing else, surely everything must be on the table, then something else is revealed. And that's absolutely astounding what was revealed today. For a decision like that to be made without going through the executive report, I mean, the level of dysfunction, incompetence and just sheer craziness that was happening in RT. And I feel really sorry for the staff who are in RT who are being paid really modest wages around this. But then we're getting conflicting messages as well from government. I mean, I suppose the huge issue here is around the funding of public service broadcasting as well and public service media and the report that has been on the minister's desk for the last 2 years. And we hear Catherine Martin saying one thing, then we hear Pascal Dunhuis saying another thing, with Micheál McGrath saying another thing, and then the Taoiseach coming out saying that the model is from another time. And what people want clarity around this, and people want certainty, and people want to know what's happening. They want a decision, and they want a decisive decision to be made around the future of funding, funding of media.
And we will get on to when that funding decision may be made. We are also hearing from government that they are awaiting two more reports from RTE this month, before we hear any more on what a funding model will look like. But Larry, I just want to get your reaction to those revelations that have emerged today in this report about golden handshakes and, you know, major...
Rose mentioned, you know, she feels sorry for the staff in RTE. It's not just staff in RTE that has suffered because of multiple governments not making a decision about the proper funding of public service media in Ireland. And, you know, the Future of Media Commission was published nearly 3 years ago now. Professor Brian McRae headed up a report. The answer is in the report. It's cost hundreds of thousands of euro to be published. And in that, it says that, you know, the public service broadcasting should be funded from the Exchequer. And they didn't, you know, take that notion out of thin air. They looked at what's happening right across Europe, what's happening in other states. And the fact that we already have public service funding direct from the Exchequer for Tg Cathair. So the sky is not going to fall in. And saying, you know, listen to Minister Pascal O'Donoghue, who's saying he can't have, you know, multi-annual funding coming out of the Exchequer to public service television, you know, and having it competing with funding for education and the HSE and hospitals, but that's a red herring.
Can you see
the amount of money we're talking about?
Can you see, Larry, these conversations are maybe difficult now when you're looking at, you know, people bypassing the rules and, you know, new revelations emerging, you know, by the day as
trust,
we're talking about.
Trust is everything in public service media. And that's why we need proper funding where the public service media organisation in Ireland has become so relying on other funding, because it's not getting public service funding, that you have all of these breakdowns in governance, breakdowns in management, breakdowns in running what should be a correct and fundamentally important part of our economy, an important part of our public discourse. And at a time when it's never more important to have proper public service discourse, we have this dysfunctional scenario where the licence fee is out of date and we need to get on with making a decision. We have the Taoiseach coming out and now supporting it. The Minister, Martin, is coming out and supporting it. and today, Leader Sinn Féin's coming out and supporting it. Why can't you just get on with it?
Okay,
I've been calling for it, been getting on with it for nearly 10 years.
Look, maybe there are still differing views even around the Cabinet table on it. Let's just have a look at those views. Earlier at Leader's Questions, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald questioned Green Party leader Eamon Ryan about the future of the TV licence, given the Taoiseach's comments that it should be replaced by direct exchequer funding. Here's a taster of that.
Your government should not chase thousands of people through the courts for non-payment of the licence. Will you abolish the TV licence, yes or no?
We will provide an alternative funding mechanism. I do not expect it to be a continuation of the current licensing system. And the exact details will have to be agreed with government before I can give you the final answer on that. Can you give similar clarity? You're paying your licence. Would you encourage Sinn Féin supporters to also pay theirs? Are you suggesting people not pay the TV licence in that interim period? Because if you do, I think that would be very damaging and dangerous, because we do need to keep that funding to keep it through.
Can I ask you, Rose, is that what Eamon Ryan was suggesting, saying, you know, is Mary Lou MacDonald suggesting that people don't pay their TV licence? Is that a fair characterisation?
Not at all. She's not suggesting that at all. And the question is for Eamon Ryan is, there wouldn't need to be interim funding or an interim situation if they didn't sit on the report for almost three years. You know, that's why we need decisions to be made. But what we're saying is, obviously, that it should be paid out of the exchequer, that you have to abolish the television licence. And as was said, that was the recommendation within the report. And I certainly think that would work. But because you're getting so many differences within government, as you do for so many issues, they need to sit down and make up their mind and get around the table. Because it's not only the staff within RT, but the people who have paid, like, what's it, 221 million that was paid in television licences. This is money that people desperately need themselves, and they've been asked to pay over money and to all this dysfunction.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Elaine,
right.
To bring you in on this, and we mentioned at the top of the programme, but another report out today and what it's saying about, you know, golden handshakes and very hefty goodbye payments. And, you know, with these major issues around transparency and governance, do you think, I mean, what is the impact of this on viewers, but on licence fee payers? I mean, that's how that all was borne out in the Dáil today. You know, why is the government chasing money from people for their licence fee in this scenario when we're trying to get a grip on RTE funding and on the RTE scandal?
Well, it doesn't help when RTE is the news. You know, they're meant to be a provider of the news. It's one of the services that they do. And as Larry said, like, trust is really important when it comes to public service broadcasting, and the current situation with what has happened at RTE has eroded that trust, and they have now seen a massive shortfall in compliance with licence fee payments. But there was already a shortfall in compliance with licence fee payments. So this isn't actually a new problem. It has been exacerbated absolutely by recent developments. But the Future of Media Commission looked at lots of things about Future of Media. It didn't just look at this issue. It made 50 recommendations, and the licence fee recommendation was the only one that wasn't immediately accepted. And I don't understand the equivocating around it, because this predates the issues with RTE, and saying that they're waiting on reports coming out of RTE doesn't actually really hold water. Like, this was a problem before then. It continues to be a problem. And across Europe, of the members of the European Broadcasting Union, the majority of them do a direct exchequer funding model. So saying that it doesn't work, or that it would have too much political influence on broadcasting, doesn't really hold water either. And as we see, we have precedent with TG Cahir getting that kind of funding as well.
I mean, can we talk about that, Shane? I mean, we keep hearing it's outdated, it's archaic, it needs to be changed. And yet, the government is clinging on to the TV licence for dear life.
Yeah. Rose mentioned there that, you know, the people themselves desperately need the money in their own pocket. Well, let's take, for example, how RTE does make up its money, because it's not just from the TV licence fee. It is also from a huge amount of commercial income from their ads, the same way Virgin Media would do. And it's something in the region of 152 million euro. Are we seriously suggesting that we're just going to turn around and say to RTE, no, we're going to just fund you from the taxpayer and we'll do away with that 152 million that's just coming away from the commercial income that's not going near ordinary people's pockets. Can I just make that point as well? Okay, so in terms of what we're doing here, we have to look at how RTE is funded. I don't accept, Larry...
Sorry, can I just get clarity? You're saying if it's Exchequer funded, that there can be no commercial entity, there can be no commercial wing to RTE.
I'm saying there's many aspects to how RTE makes up its money. You have the commercial income. If you look at the models that Larry spoke about across Europe and those that move towards directly, such as I think it was the Finnish model or whatever, they have got rid of their actual ads off television. So it is a case that if you're calling for that, we have to have clarity from Sinn Féin as to whether they would take that away. And the other point as well is, Rose, is in terms of people saying that the government caused this through, you know, not giving enough money into RTE. The government did not erode public confidence in RTE. The government didn't cause the Tubberty scandal.
The road on
No.
Well, what about the 49 of the 50 recommendations being done, except for that one single recommendation that said, it should be Exchequer funded? Is it too hot a potato?
No, absolutely not. What I'm saying, Claire, is that the government don't have to accept the recommendation. Just because the recommendations are put before them does not mean that they have to accept that. And they are going to come forward before the summer recess with the funding model that is going to be introduced. And so Sinn Féin and everyone else will have that clarity, as well as RTE.
Okay.
And when RTE needed money before Christmas, it was the government that came forward to keep public service broadcasting alive because it was needed.
Absolutely need to clarify that, because Shane, I think, doesn't understand our proposal around it or our policy around it. And that is So there's nothing wrong with having the commercial aspect of it. That would continue. What we're talking about the Exchequer funding for is the part that's being paid by the licence fee at the moment. And the important thing is both of those then must come under the Controller and Auditor General.
Can that happen simultaneously?
Yes.
That you are Exchequer funding, it's part of the budget every year, and yet there's this sort of commercial wing to it.
Absolutely.
There. Do you see any issues with that?
No, I don't.
Dual-funded model... Yeah. Remaining while the money's coming out of, I suppose, state coffers.
That's TG Carr's funding.
Yeah. Oh.
Today.
All right. So I guess the question is, do you believe that's better than, I mean, if it's not going to be Exchequer funded, then you're looking at the likes of a broadcast levy or it coming from revenue. Do any of these other ideas hold water, do you think, Larry?
I've heard a number of things float. I've heard more things floated in the last 10 years about particular funding. I'm delighted to hear Shane saying that government might be coming out with something before the summer. Why wait? You know, just make a decision.
Well, can I answer that, Larry? Because in the context of this isn't just about RTE anymore. This is far broader. We've had Virgin Media before our committee. We, in the last 3 weeks, we've had all of the radio stations in Ireland come before the committee as well as the newspaper industry only last week before the committee. Why? Because all of traditional media is in trouble. Yeah. Why? Because advertising revenue is plummeting as well. When you look at the total spend of advertising revenue in this country for newspapers, for radio and TV, it comes to little around 450 million.
And where
it's 850 million to online services.
To Facebook
absolutely.
And Google.
So absolutely.
Are you saying if there's an Exchequer funding model in place, you feel you'll have to give a little bit to everyone? Is that it?
Because Virgin certainly are asking for an equitable share of that fund. The newspapers are, because they're going down the drain as a viable business source.
So then you're wondering, you know, how far you can stretch the pot.
Absolutely.
But it's not going to be anywhere near the budget that's afforded to health or to housing.
Well, we have a situation where the newspaper industry, the radio industry and the TV industry are saying their funding model is broken. So, I mean, we're not just going to put it on the back of a postage stamp and say, well, we have to make projections. When you look at what income was for RTE in commercial revenue 10 years ago, it was around 250 million. It's shrunk to 150 million. We have to make sure that the funding model that's in place not just looks after RTE for the next 5 years, we're talking the next 50 years, and also... The newspaper industry is extremely important to me as someone who worked in it. I want to make sure that industry survives as well and that we have reputable journalism. Because if we're having to rely on social media content for where we get our information, God help us all.
OK, well, it seems then everyone has the begging bowl out of government then to help them out in this regard, Elaine. Like, are they in a pickle? Is it more than just a political pickle here?
Yeah, I don't think we're actually that much in disagreement. Like, Shane obviously agrees that the funding model doesn't work. So a change needs to be made and the decision needs to be made. And we've been waiting for that decision for a long time. The Finnish model that was mentioned earlier is one that's actually explained in detail in that Future of Media Commission report. And Finland has a similar population to Ireland. So you see licence fee models, people tend to say, oh, well, the UK survives on a licence fee. Much, much bigger population. Italy, Germany, they have licence fees, much bigger populations. Finland is much more comparable to Ireland. They have a very progressive tax the way they do it. So actually people under a certain income don't pay anything at all. And corporations actually contribute to it as well. And they've recouped 500 million euro with that tax system to fund
revenue
their public service broadcasting.
Raised objections, Elaine, in respect of that, in terms of making that specific for the media and not being part of general taxation.
But we keep hearing everything's still on the table. Well, everything's still on the table?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm not sitting in the cabinet, but I know from our position in terms of the media committee and what we have said to Minister Martin and indeed to the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach, you know, what has been established today is we are going to have an announcement before the summer, and that's the most important thing.
All right.
And we need to stop scapegoating RTE, RTE executives, grandstanding around it, allow time for the broadcaster to put their house in order. And I think Kevin Backhurst, the current chair, are getting that work done.
Absolutely.
We need that work to get on with and stop scapegoating political grandstanding around something that obviously people are interested in. And people do want proper public discourse. So make the decision, get the funding done, and let us move on to
Do you think it's right to await the outcome of these two further reports?
You can't let Peter off the hook either, though.
That we are waiting for.
No, but I mean, I haven't seen the same amount of public discourse by politicians onto the spending on the children's hospital as we have in RTE.
Absolutely.
So there are things where there's way more money being spent in this state that doesn't get the same level of public input. And, you know, because more people will tune into Oireachtas TV to watch a committee looking into RTE than, frankly, health or education or other matters, isn't a reason to actually do it. You know, so...
Are you dragging it out, Shane?
Absolutely not. I mean, if we weren't going to have a scenario where those who are actually in charge of the public money aren't answerable to the Oireachtas committees that they are answerable to, I'd be in here and you'd be rightly...
Do you think we've got much clarity to date?
I think we have. I think we've put a lot of information into the public domain, and I think we've seen a lot of change happen at an executive level because of the actual probing and the work being done by the committees.
Right.
And I think, in fairness, Larry might say that, the committees have come in for a lot of acknowledgement for the work that they have done studiously over the last 8 months in respect of this particular issue.
And I don't disagree, but I think it's time to move on and get other work done.
I wish we could, Larry.
Just, you're on the Public Accounts Committee and, you know, in terms of questions and... Okay.
Yeah, I'm a public expenditure spokesperson.
Public expenditure spokesperson. So, all right, look, it's all about the money, though,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
Look, on that matter, Rose, what would you expect now in the next couple of weeks? We may actually get details before RTE executives are back in front of a February 14th. Dáil committee. What may we expect then?
Yeah, I don't think we have to be waiting at all for the outcome of either of those two reports. I think that has to be dealt with. There has to be accountability. Changes are happening within RTE. They have to happen quicker, and there has to be complete honesty and transparency around what that's doing. But that doesn't stop the government sitting down tomorrow morning, making a decision that they should have made in the last 2.5 to 3 years, certainly around the future model of funding. That certainly can be done for the element that people have paid for in their licence up to now, which was about 221 million. I think it was 185 million that went to RTE. I accept that there's a broader issue here, but it shouldn't stop that decision being made. We need clarity. We have to stop dragging people through the courts, thousands of people through the courts, and the backlogs in the courts as there are. The judges have enough to be doing, and people have enough to be doing without having to deal with all of this.
We may be waiting yet. We'll have to see how that plays out. We'll have to leave it there for now. My thanks to Rose Conway Walsh and to Larry Bass, who joined us. Coming up next, tech CEOs face a grilling in Washington over social media harms. Do stay with us. Welcome back. Chief executives from five of the biggest tech firms have testified in front of a Senate committee in Washington over the harms that their products cause young people. CEOs from Meta.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
TikTok, X, Snap, and Discord were grilled over whether their company's online platforms enable the spread of child sexual abuse material, expose young people to physical harm, and enable extortion from minors. The tech companies defended their records and touting the tools they have brought in to combat the issue. However, their platforms were compared to guns and to tobacco.
Mr. Zuckerberg, you and the companies before us, I know you don't mean it to be so, but you have blood on your hands. You have a product. You have a product that's killing people.
Let me ask you this. There's families of victims here today. Have you apologized to the victims? Would you like to do so now?
Well,
they're here. You're on national television. Would you like now to apologize to the victims who have been harmed by your product? Show them the pictures. Would you like to apologize for what you've done to these good people?
And we actually did hear apologies today. We're going to talk more about that. We're also taken by Lindsey Graham saying people have blood on their hands, given him being very strongly of the gun lobby. But there he is, you know, hauling Mark Zuckerberg over the coals. So it was very interesting what we heard today. But Elaine, on this, you know, we heard some strong words from Senator Dick Durbin at the start saying their design choices, their failure to adequately invest in trust and safety, constant pursuit of engagement and profit over basic safety, they've all put kids and our grandkids at risk.
Yeah, and I'd arguably say it's like not just children who are at risk of how recommendation systems and algorithms kind of influence what they see. You have to think of like these systems are often designed thinking of a perfect ideal user and no one actually behaves like that. So they assume that an engagement is always a positive. But engagement can mean that you watch something but didn't like it. You watch something that actually wasn't good for you to watch. And in the case of some of the things that were mentioned in the hearing today, there was one 16-year-old who is thought to have died by suicide after seeing a lot of videos about suicide on social media platforms. And their account remained active. And to this day, even after their death, it's still being recommended that kind of content. And that's the nature of these systems. They're built to just see all engagement is a positive and therefore you want to generate more engagement, so you serve up similar content. And it can trap people in a loop. And if you're in maybe an unhealthy headspace, it can trap you in the loop of the things that you're consuming in that headspace.
Yeah, what I sensed from there was, because we could hear like the whooping and hollering in the audience, and that was from families and victims who'd come together and support the legislators in really pushing these tech firms and trying to get a hold to account. Was there an acknowledgement of harms from, you know, tech CEOs? We heard the CEO of Snap apologising, saying, I'm so sorry we have not been able to prevent these tragedies. Mark Zuckerberg apologising to families of victims. No one should have to go through the things that your families have suffered, and that's why we invest so much. I think he was talking about these counter AI systems.
Yeah, and then they were asked directly the number of moderators they have for each of their platforms, and Meta said they have 40,000 moderators. They run platforms that service billions of users. Mm. I don't believe those numbers faithfully add up. And TikTok had a similar number, 40,000, and Snap had 2,300, and X had 2,000, and Discord had hundreds, unspecified hundreds.
Yeah, so I suppose on the ratio of what is available to view and the number of viewers out there, that number of moderators doesn't appear to go nearly far enough. Razan, like when it comes to this, are we likely to see more regulation come from it?
Yeah, we should. And that is what we've been calling for, to have regulations and to use algorithm in a more positive way, in a more democratic way. For example, algorithm influence how content is being filtered, selected, and most importantly, how content is being recommended to people. Our action on the platform, how we engage, time spent on the platform, usually affect the algorithm. Mm. How is that? Everything we like, comment, share, even when we scroll down our mobile phone and you pause for a few seconds on certain content or video, algorithm will memorize and scan this behavior and then tailor a content that would actually match what we prefer, what we want. The danger in that, for example, if you watch by accident a video that is complete conspiracy theory, the next one will be the same, and third, and fourth. That will bring people to a rabbit hole of content. What we want to see is more democratic algorithm where a counter-narrative is being recommended, not only the
right,
same
okay,
kind
so
of
instead
algorithm.
Of, you know, them taking for granted that or seeing that any engagement is engagement that you want to see, it would be that they show the flip side or the other side or the bubble that you have, you know, the other rabbit hole, if you like, so you don't get stuck down one track.
Absolutely.
Which is what happened, where we are hearing all these often tragic stories from. I mean, Richard, in your line of work, is that, like, are you seeing that playing out? Are there kids, families, I mean, as Elaine said, like it's not even children, you know, people who just, I suppose, get fixated on, they're getting fixated on content online because it's being fed to them.
Constantly being fed to them, Elaine, or Claire. Like Elaine was saying, it's so hard to sit clinically. You know, I'm a family therapist. I sit with families all the time. I sit in the National Advisory Council for Parents and for Schools. I'm around this all the time. And you're hearing, you know, what you're watching there, a bit of grandstanding and all that kind of apologising. Nothing's going to change here unless we bring in robust legislation. And, you know, Jeremy Godfrey was the new regulator working on, like, pornography. And I hear him saying that it's not going to be exactly prescriptive. You're going, it has to be prescriptive. It has to be robust. Why are we so weak on this? Our children are suffering. I mean, if you sat in my clinic and you see teenage girls who are so consumed with every little minutia of their appearance, I sit with it every day. It's very hard to sit with it and hear a 15-year-old girl tell you that she absolutely hates how she looks, and you're looking at what she's consuming, and you're seeing how they're being fed terrible ideas about perfection and filtered lives and false narratives, and they're constantly being fed. If you're having a low episode and you consume something that about maybe, say, depression or eating or whatever it is, self-harm, you're going to be swamped with negative ideas around that. You're going to be given so much material on that, and so your brain is going to have negative recall anyway. In adolescence, you're probably more susceptible to these algorithmic practices. It's devastating, Claire. I mean, it can really drench a child with negative ideas.
And I'm just taken by what Mark Zuckerberg said about the link between social media and mental health. He said the existing body of scientific work has not shown a causal link between using social media and young people having worse mental health outcomes.
Yeah, but sure, they said this about cigarettes in the 50s. You know what I mean?
And of course, he would.
They were at pains.
He would say that.
They're at pains to say in the 50s that smoking a cigarette is good for you. No, but that's really important to challenge that, Claire, because I sit with it every day. And that is rubbish, right? That is absolutely right. We know the Attorney General came out last year to say the devastation that social media is having on kids is paramount. And he said we have to immediately react to it. And we see it. I mean, look, 1.1 million kids on Instagram under the age of 13, and they've only got a fraction of that off their off their platform. They don't want less. They want more. And so we have to come in here and we have to robust legislation to protect our children. And enough is enough here.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, and rightly so, on responses from the big tech firms, a lot of which are headquartered here, as we know. Mm-hmm. Shane Castles, you know, you do have interaction with Meta, with your place on the media committee. What have they been saying to you about this?
Can I first of all just say that, you know, that commentary by Richard there is obviously very powerful, and he's so right, and he's dealing with children professionally every day. We actually, when we were working on the online media bill, we made sure to bring students in as part of the discussion as well, not just adults, and indeed representatives of student bodies, because they, as you rightly said, are the people that are being harmed here, both in some cases physically and in many cases mentally as well. And Elaine quoted the amount of moderators that Meta, Facebook are using, 40,000. So we met today with Meta, actually, at the media committee. We met privately with them for a number of hours with our policy content team and how they're dealing with all of this. They quoted that 40,000 figure to us. But like,
what did you say?
But they've got 3 billion users.
So what did you say when
obviously they're working on a system that now is becoming obviously highly automated as well, and the kind of triage system that they will use to try and filter out and make sure that harmful content isn't actually shown. But there's two.
So it doesn't relate to the fact that they have 40,000 moderators. They're now saying, look, we've got AI. We've got AI programs to do the job for us here.
Yeah, but then again, because then there's different nuances within each country as well, where something that is harmful in one or offensive in one isn't in another. So, you know, you're trying to work.
But there does seem to be general themes that we've heard concerns about. I mean, we have 60 organisations here making a submission to Commissioner Naman, you know, recommending improvements around this draft code and talking about these algorithms or recommendation systems.
But there's two things at play here. So we're discussing, and the US Congressional Committee today was obviously discussing in terms of online harm, online abuse. What we're discussing is the actual targeting of people. Targeting of people in terms of whether it be conspiracy theorist items, whether it be indeed in terms of products, whether it be in terms of self-harm and repeating that. And that is more dangerous as well, before we would even get into the online harm and the online abuse. There's two major bodies of work here that's being dealt with.
And just to add something here, that like once we open our mobile phones and go to any social media apps, they start generating money from us. And they do that by targeted ads. And in general, our behaviour is as well, they want us to stay the more on the platform, so they generate more money. And how is that? It's by algorithm that is designed to make people engage with maybe toxic content, engage with some like controversial, extremely controversial topics, etc. So the more we stay on the platform,
stuff
the more
that
money
you see
they make.
And you can't look away from.
Absolutely, and especially children. You know, once our children put these phones aside, platforms, they don't generate money. So we need just to be really, really careful. It is unbelievable, important topic, but especially the impact on children.
That's what infinite scrolling was designed to do. Infinite scrolling is designed to keep children flicking.
Not children, all users. And regrets inventing infinite scrolling.
Of course it does. Of course, if you see the devastation of it, you'd have to regret it. You'd have to look at like Oppenheimer and say, look what we've done here. We've fucking destroyed worlds. We've destroyed worlds here.
The suggestion of AI, though, as well, to solve this problem. Okay. If AI was working, why aren't we seeing the effects of that? There are still videos of active shooters that can still be found online. Yeah. You should be able to digitally fingerprint those videos and be able to search and find them and take them down as quickly as possible, but yet they're still available. So if automation worked so well, why are those knownly to be harmful and should not be shared online videos still there?
I mean, the question is there. I suppose there's editorial control, like there's a human behind the wheel of AI. Are there editorial decisions being made there? Like?
Well, the thing is, those videos, that's why I cite those videos in particular, those kind of active shooter videos, they definitely are trying to scrub them from their platforms and you can still find them when you search for them, and like if you search deeply enough. So if automation was working, the stuff that they are apparently always trying to take down wouldn't be there anymore. So automation is obviously not the silver bullet here. Mm. It's not a good enough assistive technology to empower 40,000 people to moderate the content of billions.
Okay, right. Richard, I want to talk to you then about, like, I suppose, what we are asking of the new online regulator, who will have, you know, powers this year and is here, I suppose, to work to make improvements in this area. What should they be doing as a matter of urgency?
Urgency for me is identification and age for pornography. That for me is a huge ill that's out there. I work with this with teenagers, with couples. Mm. It's a huge problem. And in pornography is embedded into all aspects of technology. And all these social media platforms, it's all over them, right? And so it's not like will your child consume? They will consume pornography, whether they want to or not. And it's not like it's pornography of the 90s, whatever. This is hardcore BDSM extreme material that they're consuming, satiating normal curiosity with very, very hardcore explicit ideas that we do not want our children consuming and thinking. And so they need to come in, and this is where I'm really disappointed. We got this new regulator. He came out with a new report saying that they're going to really bring in legislation. But then at the end of it, there's always a little sting in the tail. We're not actually, it's not going to be too prescriptive. It's like saying we're going to bring in some laws around alcohol, but we'll leave it up to the vintners to decide how that works. That's not how it should work. It needs to be robust and it needs to be prescriptive. And we need to make sure that these social media platforms are called to accountability for what they're doing to our children.
Shouldn't we as a state be ensuring that it is prescriptive, that it is pointed, and it does force tech firms, as I say, who are based here, you know, of great benefit, must be said, to the state coffers, to do something?
Absolutely. And as I said, I would share Richard's sentiments completely. And I've echoed them myself, both in the chamber and indeed at committee as well. Also, the point that Elaine made in terms of the removal of content, the turnaround time in doing so is just appalling. I mean, they're quoting averages of 48 hours, which in itself is appalling, but they're getting nowhere near that as well. And when you look at the scenario where you have got billions of users and the pro rata in terms of those moderating, and if the AI systems aren't working to pick those up, we've got a problem. We've got a big problem. And I don't think we've heard the last of this, because they're a very prominent part of our society now. This is now a societal debate. It's not just about the placing of tech giants. It's a societal debate that's impacting on our children as well.
Yeah, I just wonder how much, you know, push there is. We've had panel discussions on all of this before. We've heard concerns of parents. We've heard, you know, testimony, like you were saying, what we're hearing from the US today. Again, slightly different subject, but on a, you know, it is around the issue of responsibility of tech companies to do something. Are we likely to see legislative change?
Are we likely
to see stronger rules in
absolutely.
Place
and
enforcement?
As you said, we've had panel discussions. I've been here, part of you with them as well. But we've come an extremely substantial way as well in terms of establishing the commission, establishing the commissioner, bringing in the legislation, dealing with it at committee. So we have done a significant amount, and I wouldn't be dismissive of that all. Anyway, okay. But I do agree with the panellists in terms of what has been said, in terms of the strength of that. That has to be forceful.
OK, well, there we'll have to leave it. My thanks to my panel, to Shane Castles, Elaine Burke, Razan Ibrahim and Dr Richard Hogan. Coming up next, Junior Minister Peter Burke gives us his assessment of the DUP deal to restore power sharing. Do stay with us. Welcome back. Details have been published of the deal agreed between the DUP and the UK government, which will see the return of power sharing in the north. And the deal, which would see an end to post-Brexit checks on goods moving between Northern Ireland and Great Britain, and it would ensure the smooth flow of goods within the internal market. Well, I began by asking Peter Burke what this meant for Ireland.
So the first thing, I think it's very important to get the devolved institutions back up and running in Northern Ireland, also to get the other strands of the Good Friday Agreement working again. And that's the North-South Ministerial Council, which is very important that we are talking to our counterparts in Northern Ireland. But what has happened here, really, I think the key decision was back in January 2023, when there was an agreement on data sharing. And what we mean by that is that the UK Customs and Excise agreed to share its data with the EU. And what that meant for the European Union and the single market is that they could see exactly the profile of goods that was coming in through Northern Ireland. And when you can see what's coming in, you can assess the risk. And the more safeguards you can put in, the more flexibility. So obviously the Windsor framework evolved from that. And further, as time passes by, more goods are coming in. You can see exactly the profile over a period of time. Obviously, there's changes now coming through, which the Irish government received this morning in terms of the command paper, an 80-page document, a number of statutory instruments that have to be implemented by secondary legislation in the UK. And we haven't seen any significant concerns as yet, but our legal team in the Department of Foreign Affairs are now going through it in detail to ensure that it is in agreement with what we were briefed upon by the UK government and indeed what the European Commission has agreed upon as well.
OK, so one of the big reasons for the Irish Sea checks was to stop goods potentially travelling to the euro area, i.e. here, overland. This is what the green lane and the red lane idea was all about. Will they still be in place, or is there a risk now that, you know, things are going through without routinely being checked, that this is down to trust from all partners?
Well, there's always risk, but when you can see what's coming in, it's intelligence-led, and that gives the EU the opportunity to assess what that risk is. And when the risk is significantly small or it's not material, well, then that's paved the way for them to agree to this agreement. I would point out, I think it's very important, that once you can assess the risk, obviously the green lane items are items that are going to remain or for end use within Northern Ireland. And through this new agreement, it is hoped that they will encompass about 80% of the items that will go through the new checks in terms of, or the new basket, should I say, that there won't be significant checks on. But the other items, the other 20%, are more higher risk items, which could potentially come into the European single market. And there's a horizon to continue infrastructure in terms of SBS checks for those items into the future. So it is improved in terms of the frictionless trade for items that will remain in Northern Ireland for end use or end consumption.
So I suppose from the Ireland's point of view, do you see, you know, overwhelmingly that this is of benefit to everyone? I mean, look, bottom line, power sharing is back. But beyond that, are there any concerns in the EU, in Ireland, about potential vulnerability to us here?
Well, absolutely. It was key to get the Northern Ireland Assembly back. And hopefully on Saturday, that will happen, because we saw last week 18 different unions out in strike. We know how much the public service is struggling. Health services under significant pressure in Northern Ireland. So that was a key priority for us. And we had demonstrated that political commitment with the Taoiseach and Tánaiste, that they're working on the ground with the five party leaders. And obviously that is very important. On the other side, so looking at a European context, where I do, sitting down on the General Affairs Council with my 26 other European Affairs ministers, which we will be approving this deal in time when it comes before us, it's important that the single market is protected, and the vehicle to do that is the European Commission. So they will have went through this with a fine tooth comb, because they are the original parties to the agreement, the European Commission and the UK government. And obviously the Irish government will be feeding into the Commission to ensure that the Irish interests are protected, that you have a frictionless border, that north-south trade is so important, and the all-island economy is protected. I think it achieves all of that.
All right. OK, Minister, I just want to take you to where you're at now, this EU summit, where they're trying again to secure funding for Ukraine, having reached a deadlock. What's Ireland's position, and what's your expectation about what's going to happen?
So it's been a very difficult European Council meeting before Christmas. And really, at this point in time, we're trying to get agreement in what's called the multi-annual financial framework. And that's a review of that budget. There's currently about 50 billion euro that we're looking to get for Ukraine. Of that 50 billion, about 33 billion euro is for loans to Ukraine, 17 billion euro in grants. And we're trying to get agreement for all 27 European member states that would they would act together in a unified position. That wasn't possible at the last meeting. And we heard over the last number of weeks, Hungary looking for a review mechanism every year. And obviously, I think that would be detrimental to the whole EU community, because it would almost put a bargaining chip on the table every year. So we're trying as hard as we can. The Taoiseach was at a dinner this evening, a working dinner with a number of the colleagues, a number of the European leaders, trying to push for that unified position. And we will be hopeful tomorrow that we will get that. But we are not out of the woods yet. And that's the big concern, because Ukraine needs certainty. And Putin's game is a long game. We see in the United States in a geopolitical situation whereby uncertainty is rife. We see in Europe now that it's getting a little more difficult. And that's what Putin wants. So we need to be clear that the conditionality that Europe had at the start, we're here for as long as it takes, counts. And we want to achieve that tomorrow.
Very well. Minister of State for European Affairs, Peter Burke, thank you for joining us on the programme tonight.
Thank you, Claire.
And that's it from us. Our programme is available as a podcast on all major platforms. You can also now find us on Instagram and on TikTok. But from all the late team here, good night and do take care.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.